Reading from Romans 12, 4 through 18. For as in one body we have many members, and not all members have the same function, so we, who are many, are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us: prophecy in proportion to faith, ministry in ministering, the teacher in teaching, the encourager in encouragement, the giver in sincerity, the leader in diligence, the compassionate in cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in affliction. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Pursue hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all.
Feel like I don't even need to say anything more. I'm just going to talk about community, and we've already had Jenny talk about Isaac running to the nursery, and we've had these beautiful songs, and I'm really grateful for Kelsey and Brandon's willingness to learn a new song and teach us a new song. When the first time I heard that song, Bind Us Together, I cried. And then this community prayer time. Anyway, maybe I'm preaching to the choir. Maybe these are just going to be good reinforcements of what we're already doing here, but I will share a bit of my story. I'm Paula Hampton, for those of you who don't know me, married to Larry for 39 years, and we have three young adult children in their 30s. Our oldest daughter lives in Baltimore, is married, and works for Search for Common Ground, which is a peace-building organization. Her husband, Charlie, recently got laid off from Mercy Corps because of the cuts to USAID. So that's a prayer concern. Our daughter Jessie lives in Portland, and she too was laid off from her humanitarian organization recently and is looking for work. And then our son Joseph lives in Newburgh with his partner Lillian and is a kitchen manager at Mabel Rush and an artist on the side. So really thankful for those three and what they've taught me in my life, and Larry too. He's taught me things too. My maiden name is Ankeny, and yes, I am Scott's sister. He's my big brother, the next one up in line. He's the one in the red jacket, and I'm in the little gray coat there. And my other brothers, Curtis and Robin, and my younger sister, Lynn, is the baby on my mom's lap in that one picture. My mom looks so elegant for having five kids, doesn't she? I love that picture. And then there's a baby picture of me, and then my kindergarten picture there. There was a little red schoolhouse where Bauman Auditorium parking lot is. Some of us went to private kindergarten there before Newburgh had public kindergarten. Leslie asked if I'd be willing to share this week, and I had already decided I probably should be willing to say yes if asked. So I didn't really want to be the first one in the series, but here we are. I really have enjoyed hearing from other people, and I feel like it's important that we hear each other's stories. And I thought I could go a lot of ways with this. I could talk more about what my children have taught me in life. I could talk about more of my spiritual journey. But I thought I would start by telling you a little bit about my personality and then speak a little bit about authentic community and how that's manifested in my life over the years. So I was born nearly 66 years ago in Southern California, midway through the 6 years that my dad was singing professionally with the World Vision Quartet. World Vision was a new organization at the time. We lived down there 6 years. I lived there three. And I'm the fourth of five children, as I said, and my younger sister is 2 years younger. I'm the first girl, which says a couple of things. I was very special, an answer to prayer for my parents, and I do also have some of the personality traits of an oldest child. That kind of comes with being the oldest daughter sometimes. On my father's side, I am a daughter of the American Revolution. And on my mother's side, I'm a Quaker whose heritage goes back to colonial days. My Quaker Hallworth ancestors moved west into the wilderness with Daniel Boone to avoid being conscripted into the army that my Ankeny ancestor was a captain in at 25 years old. But don't worry, Larry, this isn't Finding Your Roots, Paula Hampton, even though I find that history fascinating, and that's a topic maybe for another time or a personal conversation. We moved to Oregon when I was three and began attending Newberg Friends Church, and it really was a place of spiritual formation and friendship for me. Youth groups, Sunday school choirs, camp, discipleship groups, Bible studies. We were there twice on Sunday and once on Wednesday, like a lot of us growing up in the church. And I really felt loved and accepted there. Several friends, older friends, were instrumental in calling out gifts they saw in my life in that context. And I'm really grateful to have grown up in a faith community that valued the voices and gifts of women. Vivian Thornburg, this might sound like a familiar name, is Mike McConaughey's grandma, yeah. And she was great. She was my kindergarten teacher, the Little Red Schoolhouse, but also often stood up in open worship and shared really profound truths and just very confidently spoke of God's work in her life. And that really made an impression on me as a young person in church. And I appreciated that she was able to become a friend as I grew older. I wasn't looked down upon in that setting. The community there allowed younger ones of us to grow up and change and become their friends as adults. Another older friend, Marjorie Chrisman, that Chrisman name might be familiar to a few here. We have some Chrismans that have joined us. She was another friend modeling loving encouragement. And I had the opportunity once to give her a ride to a women's retreat, and we chatted the whole way out to the coast. And at one point, I said, "Marjorie, I don't think I've ever heard you say anything negative about anyone." And she just very quietly said, "Well, Paula, I work on it." And I thought, wow, I mean, she was probably in her 80s at that point and had spent her life really trying to be a positive encourager. And that made an impression on me. I told her, "Well, it's already too late for me." So I hope I can be that kind of role model encouragement to the generations behind me now. And I could name a lot more. I had Stu's mother as my core teacher in eighth grade, social studies and English. And there's just a whole host of people that I went to church with or who were in my community that really modeled encouragement to me. Other friends, and I use that with a capital F, other friends helped me understand myself better. At some point in our early married life, I think we had all three of the kids by this time, but Jim and Jeannie Leonard came to our church and offered some marriage and temperament workshops at church. And one of the tools they used was the four temperament profile. Maybe you've heard of sanguine, choleric, phlegmatic, and melancholy as four temperaments. And people have two at a time sometimes, or they mesh, but I came out strongly melancholic, which, by the way, is the only temperament of the four that has a negative connotation. So that doesn't help at all. The Leonards explained that the melancholy temperament needs to grieve things, or tends to grieve things before they happen. Needs a lot of time to process conflicts and loss. And if others, sometimes other people, you know, are going along and maybe there's a little blip that they process, but the melancholy personality is like way down here and process this whole thing before they can level out again. And if anywhere along that process somebody says, why can't you just get over it? Well, then the melancholy person has to get over that too and be, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get over this? So it kind of goes on and on. Well, anyway, I just never felt more seen, because that was me. And on top of that, Jim and Jeannie told the group that we need to accept these other temperaments in other people, because there's no judgment. That's just how you're wired. That's who you are. That's how God created you. And I remember crying on the way home that night in the car, because I was relieved that I was so normal for my temperament, and it was very freeing. Now, I don't even know how I come out on the Myers-Briggs assessment. I tried to take one last night online. It was like supposedly a free 5-minute Myers-Briggs. It's been a long time since I took that one. And then I got to the point where you had to enter your email before they'll send you your results, and then they wanted some money, and I was like, no, not happening. So I think I was an ENTJ, and if you've never heard of this, you can look it up later. But I'm definitely more either an introverted extrovert or an extroverted introvert or an amnivert. I kind of have always been on the line on those two. Anyway, I don't even know what I am anymore. And I stayed home most days this week without going anywhere, and I was perfectly fine with that. So maybe that's enough of an explanation of that. One of the years I worked at George Fox, I worked as an admin assistant in the religious studies department. They had everyone, students, faculty, and staff, asked to do the Clifton Strengths Assessment, which is this little book, and it has 32 strengths described in it that people reveal through their decision-making motives and tasks. Some people are activators or achievers or connectors. Has anyone taken this Strengths Finder? Yeah, okay, you know what I'm talking about. Well, my top five came out Harmony, Learner, I don't think they were in this order, but Harmony, Learner, Responsibility, Consistency, and Empathy, which often feels more like a curse than a strength, the empathy piece, especially lately, as national figures have called empathy a sin or a weakness, and I don't buy that. Anyway, I'm often aware of the emotional temperature in a room. In a meeting or group, I put myself in the position of other people, like, oh, how would I feel if that was happening to me, or if somebody said that to me, or that kind of thing. When tempers flare in a meeting or in a setting, I'm really uncomfortable because I feel the tension very strongly. I think I'm a 6 on the Enneagram. I tend to jump to worst case scenarios and want to make sure that I'm ready for any eventuality. Larry's just sitting here smiling at me because he has to deal with all this. I want to prevent the crisis if I can, not wait until the crisis hits before I deal with it. And that refers back to the grieving things before they happen. Security is important to me. I need reassurance. And I'm loyal to a fault. I never broke up with a boyfriend. They always broke up with me, except for one. It took you guys a while. My love languages are touch and words of affirmation. So I will apologize now if I've ever laid my hand on your shoulder or given you a hug when you didn't want it. Or if I got into your personal space a little too much. But hopefully, if you've ever received a card or note from me, you knew it was because I cared and wanted you to know. Words are important and meaningful to me. I'm a verbal processor. I think out loud. And I know that's probably been annoying to those of you who process internally. I score pretty high in the verbal aspects of tests like the SAT and GRE, and not so great on the math. Here's kind of a funny side story. Before we got married, I took the GRE. I was trying to, that's a graduate records exam. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. We weren't engaged or anything yet. And Larry was helping me with the algebra sections, to kind of do the pretest, ahead of it. And I remember going into the, I think it was up at Portland State. Anyway, I sat there. I was like, I don't even know how to set up these problems. And I just kind of bluffed my way through that part of the test. Anyway, when I got my scores back, true to form, the verbal was in somewhere in the 90s percentile. But the math was like in the high 60s or low 70s. I don't remember now, but Larry saw those and said, you said you were bad at math, but I didn't know you were that bad. So much for words of affirmation, right? Anyway, I married him anyway, and I haven't done taxes in 40 years. You marry a math teacher, and his love language, by the way, is acts of service, if you didn't already know that. So I'm talking about all these various personality and temperament things kind of as context for how I operate in a community and how I respond. And it's one reason why the yearly meeting debacle split and the Newberg Friends church split was so devastating for me. Those loyalty things, those needing to grieve. It's one reason we still go to Wayside in the evenings on Sunday nights most of the time, because I have friends I'm loyal to that are part of that spin-off community. It's really hard for me to lay those down and not be involved with those people's lives anymore. I've also struggled some with anxiety and depression, because that sometimes comes with being a melancholy Enneagram 6. I've had chronic migraines that add to that struggle with anxiety and depression. But wise counsel from friends and medication and a good neurologist and even just simply growing older have helped that a lot. One of the highest compliments anyone ever gave me about my personality was to tell me that I'm authentic or genuine. I can sometimes be perceived as aloof, I will admit that. I think it might be a little bit of an Ankeny trait. But I'm still usually straightforward and honest even in that. My Webster's dictionary tells me that authentic means not false or copied, genuine, real, representing one's true nature or beliefs, true to oneself. And this brings me to kind of the second part of my talk this morning, which is authentic community. Something many of us commented on during our visioning process that we long for. Authentic community. The passage Larry read earlier has a lot to say to us as individuals. We have various gifts and ministries that we are to use within the body. And Paul also includes imperatives in this section of Romans. These are verbs that demand attention or action. Love one another. Hate evil. Hold fast to good. Show mutual affection and honor. Be ardent, patient, serve, and persevere. Practice hospitality, live in harmony, rejoice, weep. So I think we see a pretty good picture of hints of authentic community within this body. Like I said, I wondered if I even needed to share this morning, but we do have unique and varied personalities that gather here every week. I had authentic community modeled to me growing up. I carry some vivid memories. Remember, I can just picture the altar at Newberg Friends Church. I was probably young school aged. My mom was praying with other women around the altar for a friend whose husband had left her with three young children. And These women were crying and praying together, and just obviously made an impression on me. I was too young to understand the infidelity and the impact that this divorce would have, but I knew that these women had gathered with love and concern. Several close friendships in junior high and high school proved to be influential in my spiritual and emotional formation. Several friends I made at camps and within the year to meeting became authentic community for me. I had one friend I wrote letters with back and forth to Salem. Seems kind of funny now, it's like 30 miles away. But we wrote letters every week, sometimes twice a week, back and forth. For those of you who don't know, that's mail with envelopes and stamps, and and you wait a couple of days before you get it. We shared a lot of deep stuff in those letters, and a lot of formation took place just back and forth with that one friend. Work relationships, family, women's groups, and especially a mom's prayer group that I went to regularly when our kids were young, provided authentic community. We met to pray for our schools and each of our children individually. And our sharing, though, went much deeper as we listened and cared for each other. I remember a season when I was experiencing anxiety and depression. I didn't even know to call it that at the time, but I had a morning where I just could not stop crying. Kids were off to school. I was heading to this group for prayer, and I almost turned around and went back home. And then I had this thought, I think it was a God message, just saying, if I can't show up exactly as I am right now, what am I even doing? This is all a sham if I can't be who I am with these people. And I went ahead and continued to the prayer group, and of course was met with grace and compassion there. One friend asked me if I felt comfortable putting my hand over my heart, and then she placed hers on top of mine, which in itself was very moving to be held like that. And then she prayed an earnest, sincere prayer for me. It's very meaningful and genuine community. As Larry and I began attending North Valley about 7.5 years ago, the community prayer time that we all just experienced quickly became for me one of the most important aspects of gathered worship here. I'd always been a part of a really large congregation, and that kind of sharing just didn't happen very often. But here at North Valley, we can stand up and share, as we just did, carry each other's burdens and the praise, the small stuff and the big stuff, and our children sometimes share among us too. Which is another thing I appreciate about my Quaker heritage is children can also receive words from the Lord and share them. So I've been thinking about all these ways I've experienced authentic community, how my personality deals with those, and also some of the barriers and openings we have with community. A barrier I've noticed that we should avoid is assigning motives to others. A couple years ago, someone sent me a pretty heavy, weighty email accusing me of fishing for information from her so I could manipulate a decision or maneuver a decision a certain way. And my initial reaction, melancholy, oh, I feel terrible. I have to go through this grief process of did I let this person down, or what's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? And I kind of reached out and apologized, like, oh, I'm so sorry. But then as I read it again and thought about it more, I just started feeling really angry. How could someone question my integrity and loyalty and sincerity? Didn't you know me at all? We did end up talking honestly with each other about the conflict, but I know it took me way longer to get over it than it did this other person. And that person had assigned motives to me that simply were not there. So we need to be careful of that. I once read somewhere that expectations kill relationships. So we need to be careful with our expectations of others. We're all human, We often disappoint each other. So letting go of expectations relieves us of burdens we aren't meant to carry, either individually or corporately. We can sometimes get pulled into gossip masquerading as concern. I've been on both sides of that. How many times have you heard gossip expressed as a prayer request? Or even in a prayer? All the information comes out that maybe we don't need to know. We just need to know to pray for the person. It's been helpful for me to ask, is this my story to tell within the community? Many years ago, I made this mistake, learned the hard way, a valuable lesson. A friend was struggling in her marriage, and I shared it as a prayer request in a group without her knowledge or permission. Well, got back to her, and she confronted me. And she was a very private person, obviously more private than I am, and did not appreciate my sharing her story. So I vowed right then to be sure to ask a person's permission to pray for them or to take their request to a larger group. And I've been careful to do that since. I think sometimes we fear emotions, and especially tears. I'm an empathetic person and my mom's daughter, and to know me is to know my tears. For me, those tears are often a sign of the Holy Spirit's tender touch. A couple of weeks ago, Sunshine shared an open worship, and I loved that she didn't apologize for her tears. She stood there, and we all waited patiently while she continued to kind of gather herself, and then she continued with the message that she wanted to give to us. It's how it should be. There are situations where girding up of emotions is helpful. Times when we need to be able to state a case or make a point without our emotions clouding, getting in the way of the message. But most of the time, in the context of this faith community, our emotions are human expressions of deep feelings. Don't we want to be fully human together? I'll never forget a memorial service when a son-in-law, sharing about his love for his father-in-law who had died, began to cry. He was at the microphone, and, oh, I'm sorry. And I just wanted to almost shout out, don't be sorry. Your tears are a sign of your deep love for this person. Let's continue to weep with each other and celebrate those tears as the gift of the Spirit that they often are. So our tears can open the way for authentic community. We hold each other's pain, sorrows, and joys gently with compassion and tenderness and a commitment to carry those confessions with integrity and confidentiality. This is so important, maybe one of the most important things in building authentic community. Acceptance without judgment can also open the way for authentic community. We lean into accepting people as they are. We release our feelings of intimidation, of feeling less than, because we trust that all around us are people who love us and want the best for us. It's one reason I can stand up here today and share with you all. We want to be people who understand that Christ speaks to all and through all, and that our words and actions are valuable within this community. Those of us who are more outspoken might need to wait a little longer and leave room for quiet, thoughtful friends to process their thoughts and feelings before sharing in a meeting. I know I often need to take a pause. On several occasions throughout my life, I've received words fitly spoken, what I'd call direct words from the Lord that met my condition at a specific point in time about a specific circumstance or concern. The other person probably didn't know that their words carried such weight. But the Spirit used those words to encourage me or heal me in some deep hidden place in my soul. And I've been grateful for those. Maybe you've had that experience too. I want to be aware of and act on the nudges I feel toward reaching out to people. I want to be open so the Spirit can use me to speak to others a much needed word. Last week on Easter, we wrote down our hope for leaning into small steps toward making kingdom love known. And we wrote those on brightly colored sheets of paper. And then Nathan Murray showed us how to fold up paper airplanes. And we threw them across the sanctuary. Quite a few of you were probably here for that. And I picked up a bright yellow airplane. And I had barely started to open it and read it when Sarah Taylor and her daughter Grace were just right in front of me. And Grace had picked up my bright green airplane. And I guess she wanted to know who I was, or Sarah was going to show her who I was, who this Paula was on this airplane. And I had picked up Grace's, which I thought was really wild. Well, we both did, because what was the chance of that? This random airplane's picking up, and we picked up each other's. And as I unfolded the little airplane that was Grace's, she had written, "What gives me hope is family and friends." I mean, out of the mouth of babes, so sweet. I actually took it home and pinned it up on my little idea inspiration board I have in my quilting area. And I felt like that sums up what we're trying to do here, right? Right now, in this troubled political climate and season here. Family and friends giving us hope. It's you and me, all of us here together, trying to use love and kindness and empathy and acts of service and our strengths, maybe even some of our weaknesses, in whatever form, in all our various shapes and sizes and personalities, to offer love and hope and to be Christ to each other and to our community. So I wrote some questions, maybe the next slide, for open worship consideration. There you go. Maybe me sharing some of my experiences helped you think of some places where you've experienced authentic community. What opens the way for that for you? Or what barriers have you experienced? What could you learn or do to transform those barriers into openings? If these questions aren't prompting you, maybe something else will. But let's take a few minutes to think and sit together.